You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host and producer extraordinaire is Sophie Schlesinger.
Hello.
Hello. And today we are lucky to have two in-studio guests with us, Brian Kaiser and Dimitri Saad, both of Casalula Cheese and Wine Bar and Cafe. How do you say it?
Casalula Cheese and Wine Cafe.
Cheese and Wine Cafe. Sorry, I always want to put bar in there somehow, and it's just not appropriate. Casalula Cheese and Wine Cafe, and as of last year, Elsewhere, which is a really cool new restaurant, both of which are located in Hell's Kitchen. Thank you guys for taking time out to be on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Brian, I'm going to start grilling you first. So, Casalula, you guys opened 4 years ago?
Yeah, 4 years ago, May of 2007.
And what was the genesis behind the idea for Casalula? Because it's such an interesting and unique place.
Well, it was an interesting series of events in my life that led to that. I'd been working as a server in New York City restaurants for several years and had been lucky enough to work at Chanterelle, which was one of the first restaurants to have a really great cheese plate.
Yeah.
And it was part of my job there as a server to learn the cheese plate. And so I learned about cheese. Not by choice.
Because you had to.
It was required, yes.
Forced.
And then I left there and went to the Modern, and there was nobody there when the restaurant was opening that was particularly interested in cheese, but the chef wanted to do a really cool cheese cart. So I volunteered to run it, and he said to me, "Great, I never want to hear about the cheese again." And I was sort of given free rein to create this cheese program when the Modern opened, and so I sort of dove into learning a lot more about cheese really quickly so that I could pull off that job. And then realized that I was kind of tired of fine dining. And so started thinking about what I wanted to do for the next step in my career. And I decided I wanted to not work for other people anymore. I wanted to work in the sort of place that I actually like to hang out in. So someplace that was casual, not stuffy and formal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really into cheese, and I felt like Americans were starting to get more and more into cheese. And we could see it on the fine dining level, where people were getting great cheese plates or cheese carts with their $95 prefix at really fancy restaurants. And I didn't see why we couldn't create a cheese program like that in an environment that normal people could go to on a normal night and just be casual and relax and grab a couple of pieces of cheese and a beer or a glass of wine and not spend $200 each for dinner. And so all those things together led to Casalula Cheese and Wine Cafe, which the other component is that it's this tiny, tiny little place because I didn't have any money. So I think one of its charms is how small it is and how intimate it is.
I can relate to that, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. I know I say tiny to you, yeah. But your shop is truly, truly, truly tiny.
Well, and sometimes, you know, that's where the creativity comes out. And, you know, I think that's evident in
having to be
in
resourceful
places. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does. I think it was great for us that we had to do something so small because it forced us to be really creative and use the space really efficiently and do things that we, you know, we're not just a normal, just not just another restaurant, partially because we couldn't be. We didn't have a kitchen.
that always helps. Yeah. So, yeah, tell us about a little bit about how you conceived of the cheese program at Casa Lila. For any of our listeners who haven't been there, you must go immediately. It's on 52nd Street between 9th and 10th Avenues, and it is the greatest place for exactly what the reasons Brian was saying. You can get a fabulous cheese plate of one or as many cheeses as you want. I think the list usually hovers, what, around like 40 or 50 different varieties. And it's amazing. So, but tell us how you kind of conceived of your cheese program, because it is very unique and different.
Well, the original ideas behind the cheese were, one, I wanted to do a truly international selection with as much American cheese as possible. And so when we opened, that was probably about 60% imported and 40% American. And in my brief time working in the cheese world up until then, I was sort of fascinated and confused by why, no matter where you had a cheese plate, the cheeses were paired with Marcona almonds or quince paste or date cake or whatever that thing is.
Panforte.
Yeah. When, you know, those are great pairings for some cheeses, but they don't go with every cheese. And so if you get a plate of five cheeses and you have quince paste in it, the quince paste is going to go with, you know, the Spanish sheep's milk cheese on the plate, but not with everything else. And so it was really important to me to create a list of condiments to go with the list of cheeses so that we could pair the right thing, a really deliberate thing, with each cheese. And I think that's what really sets us apart. Like, our cheese plates are beautiful because each cheese is paired with a component that is really right for it. And Dimitri can probably talk more about this, but Dimitri and our pastry chef Lee Friend spend a lot of time tasting cheeses and creating pairings to go with them. And that's, you know, everything from choosing the right honey to go with one cheese to Lee creating a lemon tarragon marshmallow to go with another one, or, you know, bacon dipped in white chocolate for, like, it just, it goes on and on and on and on. We probably have well over 100 condiments that we work with. So,
and all made in house.
Not all made in house, but 50-60% probably.
Yeah, or even more than that now, I would say. But like, so the mustards, we can't really make in house. So those, you know, we buy mustards, for example. But a lot of the other things we can make in house, and it changes seasonally as well. So lots of different variations of maybe the same idea.
But can you talk a little bit about those brainstorming sessions? Like, so you and Lee get like a, you know, however many new cheeses you want to work with, and you just like
hash it out
over like hours of like preserves and pickles and, or, yeah, how does it work?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's kind of a two-step process, in the sense that a lot of the condiments we may, you know, because of the, we'll go to the market together, we'll see what's in season, we'll see what's looking good. And we'll pick out, you know, things that we want to work with. And then, you know, we'll think of what we can possibly make with those ingredients. And then, based on some previously used and, you know, pairings that we know work, and as far as texture and flavors go, when we get a new cheese, we'll get in, you know, we bring in new cheeses. Or, I bring in new cheeses maybe, you know, a couple once a week, or a few every couple of weeks. So, when we bring them in, yeah, we'll get together, we'll taste them, and from the assortment of, you know, pairings that we have on hand, we'll see if any of those work. And if they don't, you know, we'll think of what we can make that can work with that cheese. So it's just a matter of tasting, comparing notes, just thinking of what comes to mind, like, oh, that would taste really good with this. If we have it on hand, we'll try it. If it works, then that's, you know, it's decided. If not, then, you know, we'll come up with something new and then try it once it's ready and see if that works too.
So what, I mean, your condiments are so innovative. Brian, the lemon tarragon marshmallow was a really good example, because, you know, that's just totally wild. What was like something, I want to know about like the epiphany pairing, and then like the total bomb. Yeah. Like, what was like, you know, you're like, oh man, that I thought that was going to work and it didn't.
Well, the whole process is, like a lot of creative processes, sort of about throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks. So every time you get together and try stuff, there are bombs, right?
Yeah. Like
you taste a cheese and you think, this would be really good with roasted onions. And then you taste them together and it's awful for some reason. And other times, somebody says lemon tarragon marshmallow and you think,
Huh?
And then you taste it together and say, oh my God, like they were made to go together.
Right.
It's really great. And one of the challenges that Dimitri didn't mention is that we do multiple pairings for each cheese, like usually a sweet and a savory and sometimes a third. Because when we get an order for six cheeses, we wouldn't want somebody to order six cheeses, five of which are going with sweet things. Mm-hmm. So we try to mix it up. So they have the added challenge of not just finding one pairing that's great with this, but a sweet, a savory, a fruity, like options.
Wow. So. That's intense.
Yeah, because you don't only want them to have to be all sweet, but you also don't want them to be all crunchy, for example. You want them to have all the same texture, or all fruit, or all pickled things. So you do want to mix it up on the plate. And depending on the specific combination you get for that plate, you need to have options for each cheese. So we do have to come up with usually two, often three pairings for each cheese. And there's definitely the preferred one. Like, this is the one that works best, but you also have to have some other ones.
It's like mini Top Chef. You get like each cheese plate and you're like, all right, go. You have to like figure out how to, texture, style, sweet, savory, the whole nine yards.
No, especially when tables order more than one cheese plate throughout the night, you don't want to give them, another cheese plate with a similar pairing or the same pairing that they had on the previous cheese plate. So you also need to remember what they've ordered and try to switch it up that way too.
Do you write that stuff down?
Yes. Yeah, we do write it down. Yeah. I've actually created a spreadsheet that has the three condiments listed in order for the cheeses that are on the menu at the moment. Just that ensures also for the nights that I'm not working, whoever's the other fromager that's working can be consistent with what we pair with what. And it's a quick and easy reference for them as well. But it also helps us keep track. If I have a cheese, on the menu in May, and then it goes off the menu for a while and comes back in September, I can go back and see what we paired with it before, and then just update it for whatever's in season at the time if that condiment isn't available at that time again.
Has anybody ever ordered, like, what's the most cheeses anyone's ever ordered? Has anyone ever ordered like all of them?
I'm only aware of one table that came in and said, we want them all.
Wow.
That might have been before your time.
Yeah,
have you seen that?
I haven't seen that. The most I've done for one table.
That's awesome.
The most I've done for one, it was a table of four people, and they ordered, I think, six cheeses each. That's 24 cheeses. For one person, the most I've had is 12.
Wow.
We're in Midtown Manhattan, and so there are a lot of really great restaurants in the area, and so a lot of servers and bartenders and sommeliers from great restaurants come to us after work. We're open till 2 every night too. So, the staff at Per Se comes in a lot, and there were a group of them that were coming in really regularly. And every time they'd come in, they'd say, "We want to order everything, but there's not enough of us tonight." And it sort of became a joke every time they came in. They think, not tonight, but someday we're going to order everything. And then one night it was somebody's last night of work, and so a lot of the staff came to celebrate. And so they sat down, took over basically the whole restaurant, and said, "We're ordering all the cheeses."
Wow.
So they got a line of 40 cheeses down the middle of the table.
Nice.
That's awesome.
So hats off to the staff of Per Se.
Yeah.
What's been popular this summer in terms of pairings, and what have people been, what's been the most popular, or what's been like a theme that you've been noticing?
Yeah, generally because sometimes people come in and they request cheese according to the pairing that they had the last time. They remember the pairing.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that we get the requested the most is probably the brown sugar fudge. So that's one that we pretty much carry almost all the time. And it's, I would say that's the one that stands out as the most requested. Our brittles also get requested often. I think in the summer, we find a lot of because of all the fruit that's available, we do a lot of stewed berries or, fresh fruit compotes or flavored curds, lemon curd, and other fruit flavors. And those, you know, in the summer, I think, are also very popular.
Yum.
Well, Dimitri, we just kind of jumped right into talking with you. We didn't ask about your background at all. How the heck did you wind up as the fromager at Casa Lula?
Yeah, I was just really in the right place at the right time, I think. This is a relatively new career for me, so I don't have a background that's exclusively in restaurants, or wasn't for many years. And also with cheese, it's something that I just started really looking into in the last 2 years. So after, you know, taking some cheese classes at Murray's and spending a month making cheese at Jasper Hill Farm and working in their cellars, which was a great experience, I came back and to New York, October of 2009, I think, and saw an ad for assistant fromager at Casa Lula. And it was literally 2 days after I came back from Vermont.
And what had you said to your coworkers when you were in Vermont and
right.
heading back to New York to find a job?
Right. So while I was at Vermont, you know, they're like, what are you going to do when you go back to New York? And I say, oh, it'd be great if I could, you know, work part-time at, you know, behind the counter at Murray's and then work part-time at a restaurant like Casa Lula. And then 2 days after I come back, I see the ad, I get on my bike, a bike over there, hadn't even gotten my stuff out of storage or anything, like fixed up my resume quickly and interviewed with Brian that same day. It was a Sunday, I think, even. And then started training that very week. And then it just continued from there. So all along, we know, also working at Casa Lula first, you know, just doing service, I was like, oh, it'd be great if one day I could, you know, run the program and buy the cheese, and that's what's happened as well. So all along, things have kind of been fallen into place for me, which has been, but it's also because of all the great people I've met and have been really encouraging along the way, and who have helped me along. But
that's awesome, though.
Yeah.
It was predestined. It was like your cheese fairy godmother was looking out for you.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's a great business, though, in which to be in Dimitri's position, because it's young and it's growing. Like, when I put an ad up for assistant fromager in a restaurant, it's not like thousands of people with that kind of experience respond to the ad. I don't assume that I'm looking for people with that experience. I'm looking for people with a diverse experience and an interest that can come in and we can work with them to do what we're doing. And Dimitri had exactly that resume. Like, it didn't get no directly applicable experience, but he had a bunch of obvious interests and passions that we saw would work really well in this job. And it's worked out perfectly. And oddly, in New York, looking at resumes, Dimitri and I went to the same high school in San Diego, 10 years apart.
Random.
Like, honestly, the only reason I called him in was because I saw my high school on his resume.
Your life
comes
out. That's destined. I have to call the guy.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have reached the halfway point of our show. We're going to take a super quick break. And when we come back, going to talk more cheese. Stay with us on Cutting the Curd. Oh, kid, she doesn't need your help. She studied art in Spain. Tall boys across her brain. It's all boys, men, they'll do anything. They sat her in the shade, threw her a parade. All lined up, marching back and forth all day. She's boy, crazy. She's boy, crazy. Oh, she's boy. Right. And with that, we are back on Cutting the Curd. You are listening to the Heritage Radio Network, and I'm your host, Aunt Saxelby, co-host and producer and all-around great gal, Sophie Schlesinger, to my right. And today we are talking with Brian Kaiser and Dimitri Saad of Casa Lula Cheese and Wine Cafe and Elsewhere Restaurant. So let's talk a little bit about Elsewhere, your new project. When, how, what's the food like? I want to hear it all.
Well, we talked a little bit about how Casa Lula is this tiny place without a kitchen. We have a panini press and a convection oven, and our chef Megan Johnson and pastry chef Lee Friend do amazing work there, and I think most customers who sit down and eat don't realize that we don't actually have a kitchen.
Uh-huh.
They do really great food with really limited resources. But we wanted to do our next step as a place that was a little bigger, that had a full kitchen, that gave these two really talented chefs the tools to do more. And Casa Lula's tiny and very, very busy, so we wanted to do a space that would allow more people to come in. So basically the idea is, what would Casa Lula be if it were bigger? And it turns out that it would be a lot different than what Casa Lula is.
Interesting.
It's not small plates. It's more like traditional restaurant, appetizer, entree, dessert sort of size portions. We have a great cheese program, but because we can do so much more with the food, it's not the central focus of the restaurant. It's a great addition to what we do. And one of the things that's really exciting to me is that when we opened Casa Lula, the idea of doing a 40 cheese selection of all American handcrafted cheeses would be like, there weren't really enough great ones to choose from. We weren't confident that we could always have a great list.
I think, and you said 60-40 at the beginning. You had like 60% imports, 40% American.
Yeah, I think it's about that. It probably stays about that. Maybe it's closer to 50-50 now.
Yeah, I'd say it's closer to 50-50 now at Casa Lula.
Yeah. But what's really fun to me is that we have seen such great advances in cheese making in this country over the last 5 years, in terms of the number of people making cheeses, but more importantly in terms of the quality of the cheeses that people are making. And it's been really exciting to watch that growth of people who were, you know, little independent cheesemakers, you know, husband and wife teams and family farms and things like that, that started making cheeses 5, 6, 7 years ago, and we would taste their stuff and say, it's pretty good, you know, we'll get, and then 3 years later taste the same cheese and say, oh my God, this is amazing. This is better than the European thing that it's based on. This is gorgeous. So when we started Elsewhere, we realized that there are enough spectacular American cheeses that we can do an all-American list and be really proud of everything we do. And so we've done that, and it's really exciting.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Well, I want to get back to the American cheese thing, of course, because, I don't know, it's my obsession. But I wanted to talk to you just about the neighborhood. Casa Lula and Elsewhere are both located in Hell's Kitchen, which, you know, I feel like is a bit of, like, it's kind of far away from a lot of other restaurants. What made you choose?
It's far away from you.
It's far away from me. It's true.
It's like, Midtown Manhattan. It's actually not that far from a lot of people.
Well, that, okay. But I mean, so I feel like when you opened there, you were pioneers. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
A little bit. And so why that neighborhood, and what, I don't know, what do you think? And then Elsewhere, you chose to open in the same neighborhood. So you feel like there's a lot of exciting stuff happening there.
Yeah, there were a few things that went into opening in Hell's Kitchen in the first place. One was, as I said before, we didn't have any money. So when we were looking for locations to open this thing we were going to do, almost every neighborhood in New York was out of the question, either because it was too expensive in terms of real estate, or because it was really in the middle of nowhere. You know, we didn't feel confident opening in Washington Heights or Gravesend, Brooklyn, or anything like that.
Come on, Gravesend, Brooklyn has a great cheese scene.
Well, no. Well, we could have afforded it, that's for sure. And so quickly it narrowed down to just a few neighborhoods where the real estate seemed reasonable, and it seemed like we could actually do what we were doing for the demographic that we were aiming for. And that was pretty much the East Village, Lower East Side, and Hell's Kitchen. East Village and Lower East Side, I think, are a little younger. When I'm down there, I'm surrounded by kids in their 20s, and I'm not in my 20s any longer. And I felt like with what we were doing with cheese, we were not looking for a bunch of people just out of college.
This isn't Welcome, like, to the Johnsons. You don't want, like, $2 right, exactly, PBRs and couches with plastic on them.
Right,
no.
Right. Yeah. But we really see ourselves as a place for people to learn new things and expand their culinary horizons. And so to me, that feels like people in their 30s who have a little more disposable income now don't mind spending $10 on a glass of wine instead of six, and you know, want to go out, but without breaking the bank. You know, it's a, not a special occasion place exactly. It's a great date place and so on. So we really focused on Hell's Kitchen for that reason. It was affordable, and it seemed like the people in that neighborhood were a little more mature and a little more professional. It's also a very eclectic neighborhood. I mean, it's full of immigrants, and it's full of, you know, 80-year-old Greek couples who've lived there for 60 years and paid $28.97 for their two-bedroom apartment. And their new condos going up that, you know, starting in the low $3 million. So it's a really diverse neighborhood. And where we opened, which is just west of 9th Avenue, at the time made us pioneers, but only by like 40 feet. People would go to 9th Avenue. 9th Avenue has a lot of restaurants on it, and 10th Avenue was sort of way in the beyond. So we went literally
40 feet. I love it.
Across the street.
Yeah.
Just far enough that you're edgy, but not too far that you're scary.
Yeah. And now there's stuff on 10th and 11th Avenue. Like, we're not pioneers anymore. But it turned out to be a great neighborhood, and the people, like, when we were under construction, people would poke their heads in and say, "When are you guys going to open? We're so excited that you're here." You know, we put up a sign that said, "Coming soon, Casa Lula Cheese and Wine Cafe," and people just would come in and share their excitement with us. And then once we opened, you know, "We're so glad you're here." And that was a great feeling.
Yeah.
And even though the neighborhood, 9th Avenue and East, is full of restaurants, it's not full of what I would call great restaurants.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
There's a lot of
we
good.
Can say that.
Yeah. There's like, if you want, you know, takeout or delivery Thai and Chinese, there's a ton of stuff. And if you want a good beer bar with chicken wings and burgers, there's a lot of great stuff. And if you want to spend $200 on dinner, there's a lot of great stuff. Some of the best restaurants in the world are in that neighborhood. But there's this hole in the middle of affordable but really high quality neighborhood stuff that feels like you can get a lot of downtown but not in Midtown.
Yeah.
So we felt like we were bringing a little bit of downtown to Midtown.
So what about the name? I've actually always been curious about this, and I've just never asked because I don't know why. The opportunity has never presented itself.
When I decided I wanted to open a cheese-focused restaurant, I started looking for names that had some sort of cheese element to them, and, you know, a lot of things came up, like the Drunken Goat, and
it's good you didn't go with that.
Yeah. No. Well, every idea I had, I would go on the internet and find that 400 people before me had exactly the same idea. Like, oh, there's a place in New Zealand with the same name, and there's cheese with that name, and there's a magazine with that name. And, so I was looking at a lot of foreign languages and words for cheese and curd and milk and things like that, and was looking through a Latin dictionary, and the word for curd, which is what they use for cheese in Latin, is caseum or caseus. And so all the manifestations of that were in a row, C-A-S-E. And in the midst of them was this word Casalula, C-A-S-E-L-L-U-L-A, that is apparently Latin slang. It was news to me that they had slang in Latin, but
thank God.
that means a little house or a little hut, but it shares the same root, C-A-S-E, as caseum and caseus, which means cheese. So I thought, that's basically a little house for cheese.
Yeah.
Or the little cheese hut.
Yeah.
So it seemed perfect. And if you Google Casalula, you get us and Latin dictionaries, and that's it. Nobody else is using the word. So it's like, okay, it's meant to be. This is my name now.
I'm glad you went with Casalula and not the little cheese hut. I think that's a good move.
Yeah, I feel like we're helping Latin stay alive and evolve. Like, we're doing for Latin what Snoop Dogg is doing for the English language.
Maybe if you open a third place, you can have like a Snoop Dogg word, you know,
yeah.
One of his innovations.
Cassizzle.
I just saw Soul Plane. It was awesome.
Was it?
Yeah. Anyone who hasn't seen Soul Plane, highly recommend it.
Right. Did you rent it?
I'm going to put it on my queue while we're talking.
No, it was on TV, and it was just like, I rolled my eyes. My fiance was like, let's watch this. And I was like, no. And then I was like, this is the funniest thing I've seen in a long time. which probably also tells you how often I go to the movies. But we only have a couple minutes left, but we were talking about American Cheeses and how excited you guys are about the new, or the development and quality and, all that. We were all three of us just at the ACS conference in Montreal. Were there any standouts for you that, really took, I don't know, that got your attention, American, Canadian, anything?
Dimitri?
I know you like the Canadians, Dimitri.
Yeah.
Let's hear it. No.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of really good Canadian cheeses. And something I'd like to do is get more Canadian cheeses on the menu. At the moment, it's kind of difficult to do. It's hard to get Canadian cheeses in the U.S. That being said, I mean, there were definitely some very good ones that I tasted when I was there. I don't know if you got a chance to taste many of them either, but it was a bit frustrating because you could taste them and you could like them, but then
you can't get them imported.
Then you can't bring them into the U.S. So
right,
and I understand that I'm not sure exactly why that is.
Do you think it's a virtue of the size of production?
I think that could be part of it. Although, I mean, I would imagine some of the production is as big as, you know, cheesemakers in Vermont, and it's not that much further for cheeses from Quebec, for example. But I think, you know, and someone mentioned that there isn't really the market for it here, and that American cheeses need to, you know, Americans need to learn more about American cheeses before they start eating Canadian cheeses. And I think that's a valid point as well. The American cheese industry, even though it has grown a lot in the last 4 years, as Brian mentioned, there's still room for it to grow, and there's still a lot of very good new American cheesemakers coming out as well. So I guess it there's a point that, you know, we could, you know, or we, you know, we should focus on that more, and educating the American public about American cheeses before we, you know, start looking at Canadian cheeses as well.
I think the Canadian cheeses were great, and we share a continent after all. I mean, mm-hmm.
Exactly.
It's not that big of a difference.
It looks
like the Midwest when you get up there again. Yeah. You know, it's like we all share these.
Yeah, right. Montreal looks just like St. Louis.
Right.
No, but driving from Vermont to Montreal, I was struck by how much it looks like the Midwest.
Right. It's sort of silly because we get cheeses from a lot further away, and it's no problem. And just because there's a border in between us, it's a big bureaucratic problem. And so when we're dealing with little cheesemakers who don't make a ton of cheese, they probably can't afford what they would have to go through to get an export license or get a distributor who could export it. And they don't have the time, and they probably don't need to. I mean, a lot of people are selling out all their cheeses by going to their local green market and selling to a couple local restaurants and shops. So they don't need to go through the hassle.
Right.
Which, you know, the flip side of that is it's good to stay local, and it's good to give us an excuse to go to Canada and try what they're doing there.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know, Brian, any standouts for you, American or otherwise?
Yeah, well, you know, the Best in Show winner, the Rogue River Blue, has been one of my favorite cheeses for years, and
awesome cheese.
It was gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous this year, so I'm excited.
Yeah,
for
hats
them
off to Carrie and David.
Hats off to Carrie and David. They do such great stuff and are nice people on top of it all.
Mm-hmm.
The one new one that was totally new to me was, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but it's Becha Farms, I think.
They're in Missouri, right?
They're in Missouri.
I saw their name in the awards ceremony, and I can't say that I found any of their cheese in the menagerie that is the mm-hmm. Festival of Cheese. But
I did, actually. I saw the woman who I assume is the cheesemaker and recognized her because she was, I don't know if she's Mennonite or Amish, but was wearing an outfit that stood out at the American Cheese Society conference. So I saw her because I saw her collect her awards and asked her about her cheeses and said, where are they? And so she pointed them out to me. And a couple of them were really, really good. The Florida Valais, which was a washed rind cheese, was really, really delicious. So that was the one to me that I'd never heard of that I found that I really, really liked. And then there were some of the old familiar stuff was really great. Uplands Pleasant Ridge Reserve is always good.
Oh, yeah. I tried some stuff from Prairie Fruits this year that I really loved. Actually, Leslie Cooperrand was on our show a couple months ago for the State of Cheese in Illinois, and I never had a chance to try her cheeses, and they were great.
Yeah, so. We've got some of their stuff on the list now, don't we?
Yeah, we do have some of their stuff on our list.
And I gotta come in.
And also, Brian mentioned Missouri, and I didn't see this cheese at the Festival of Cheese, and it didn't win any awards, but the Bosa from Green Dirt Farm in Missouri is one that I know is Brian's personal favorite at the moment, and one that I was surprised didn't win any awards if it was entered. I didn't see it necessarily out there, but that's a really good cheese from Missouri as well.
Yeah, that's people ask me all the time, what's your favorite cheese? And it's certainly
it's
not
an impossible question.
You can't answer it, the answer doesn't stand still. It changes all the time. And I usually have trouble answering that, but right now, like this week, Green Dirt's Bosa is my favorite cheese in the world.
All right, everybody. Yeah. So you heard it. Get yourself to Casalula or elsewhere or both, and try these delicious cheeses. What websites so people can find you guys?
www.casalula.com. That is spelled exactly the way that it sounds. Casellula. And elsewherenyc.com.
Excellent.
And we didn't talk about this, but we should at least mention it, that in October you and I are going to do a cheese maker event at Elsewhere.
We
in
are.
In our garden room.
Yep.
We don't really know much more detail beyond that, but in honor of American Cheese Month.
October is officially American Cheese Month for anyone who doesn't know. It's been ordained by the American Cheese Society. Yeah. And we're going to have an event. It's going to be a fundraiser for the American Cheese Education Foundation, which is a branch of the ACS that raises funds for education initiatives, but also provides scholarships for people to attend the yearly conference, and just does a lot of good work. So we're going to cook up something delicious. So stay tuned for that for sure.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you guys both for taking the time to be on the show. And everybody who's listening should go to Casalula and elsewhere because they're fabulous restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then call in and tell us about it because no one ever calls in.
or send us an email.
Or send us an email.
Info at heritageradionetwork.com. Do you love Casalula? We want to hear about it.
Should we do a discount? Should we say mention Cutting the Curd?
That would actually be a great experiment. I don't know how. My grandma might come.
Yeah. No. Do you want to know how many people are listening? We'll find out.
Yeah.
Mention Cutting the Curd at Casalula or elsewhere, and we'll give you a free piece of cheese with your cheese order. We'll give you one free extra piece of cheese.
Wow, cool. That is super generous. Thanks,
that just
Brian.
Came to me. Yeah. I'm sure I'm just creating a domino effect disaster.
Do you want to put an expiration date on it or anything?
Let's give it a year.
Let's give it a year. Okay.
Let's say August 22nd, 2012.
Wow.
We'll stop honoring this.
Super, super generous. Well, thank you guys again for being on the show. This was tons of fun. And I'm sure, hopefully you'll come back.
I hope so, too.
All right.
Thanks, Anne.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Anne Saxelby. Listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Anne Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Anne Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.